Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private paid therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to session 33 of Selling the Couch. Hope you're having a fantastic week. I'm sorry about my voice. I was cheering and hanging out all weekend, and my voice is a little bit more bassy than usual. Today's podcast is with a licensed marriage and family therapist. Her name is Shelley Davidskew, and Shelley and I actually talk about her private practice journey, but something a little bit more unique, which is that Shelley has this passion for thinking about how food and what we drink affects mood and how we feel in general.
When it comes to moods and food, what you eat can have a big impact on how you feel. Certain foods can reduce stress, relieve anxiety, and make you feel better.
I feel like, as I look back, I know this was not a topic that I learned a lot in my own training, which was the impact of what we eat and what we drink during the course of our day when we're doing therapy, how that impacts the energy and the drive that we have during the day and our ability to really be present with our clients. And so we talk about some of the things that Shelley does during her sessions and in between her sessions to be able to maintain her sense of energy so that you can feel revitalized and energized when you start your day, but also feel that same level as you start to wrap up with that last client during the day. And then we just talk about some of the other things about her own private practice journey, the lessons that she's learned along the way, some of the fears that she had when she started her private practice. And then as we approach the hot couch round, Shelley just shares some awesome tips that we can all take away at no matter what stage of the private practice journey that we're on. So without further delay, here's my conversation with Shelley Davidskew from anxietytraumatherapy.com. Hey, Shelley, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. How are you?
I'm doing well. I feel like this is going to be a really good conversation. I always enjoy when we have, when I can talk to other clinicians about their private practice journey.
Yeah, I'm super excited to share and connect with you.
Yeah. You know, I think I'd love to start with this question, which is, what is a favorite quote or a favorite mantra, like a saying that has inspired you on your private practice journey? And then how could someone that's just getting started in private practice, how could they use that?
Well, this may be a little bit unconventional just in the realm of private practice, but one of my favorite quotes that I literally have used for years and years is "Let food be thy medicine" by Hippocrates.
That's a good quote.
Yeah, this has been incredibly powerful in my own life and also in the way that I run my practice and basically everything that fuels the energy that I put, both the energy and the love that I put into my private practice as well.
Yeah. How do you think that has motivated and inspired your private practice?
Several years ago when I was in graduate school, I really changed the way that I looked at food and the way that I fueled my body for energy to be able to get through the classes, get through the papers, get through the exams, and really show up in a way that I could be present for my clients. And I think that this is really at the foundation of all of my work, because I feel like if I like I realized that if I didn't feel good internally, it was going to be really difficult, if not impossible, for me to really hold a safe space for my clients and do the work that was necessary to help them get better.
Well, I mean, I think it's a great way of looking at it, right? Because I think a lot of times as clinicians, we don't often think about, you know, I feel like we preach this idea of like taking care of ourselves and we tell that to our clients, but we often forget that as clinicians. And I like that perspective you have because I think it's absolutely true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I got a pretty rude awakening back in when I was in graduate school and I was exhausted all the time and drinking coffee. And then if I was on stimulants, I would show up to my session kind of nervous because I was a new clinician, and it just kind of snowballed from there. And I realized that A, I wasn't serving myself, and B, I really wasn't serving my clients if I couldn't show up in a way that was really congruent and aligned in my own body.
Hmm. So now that you've changed your eating habits, how does that translate into the therapy room?
You know, it transfers and translates into so many ways, because the better I take care of myself, the better I can show up for my clients.
Mm.
And it really starts with the awareness, the mind-body connection awareness. So even if, for example, even if I never ever talked about food in my private practice, at least I would have the mind-body awareness to really understand how foods impact my body and how I feel when I eat certain foods versus when I don't eat certain foods. And the awareness and the process level thinking is something that I have been able to share with my clients even when we're not even talking about food.
Mm.
And that's incredibly powerful because change really happens at the process level.
Right.
And when we're able to really speak of that in a way where we not only know it by theory, but know it by practice, it's really evident.
And I think it is absolutely a powerful thing when we practice those things that we often tell our clients to do.
Yeah.
So I'm like really curious, what are some of those foods or what are some of those things that you do like at a very practical level that you feel like has improved your energy, that's improved your focus and ability to be more mindful and present?
It sounds kind of silly because it's so incredibly basic, but really starting with a high level of water in the morning, like being able to hydrate the body from the get-go right away so that the body is hydrated and the mind, the brain is hydrated so that the brain is working at optimal levels. And then from there, you know, we build the foundation into a day that's successful with nutrition, with clean sources of carbohydrates, avoiding like gluten type products or refined sugars, because that tends to cascade into all sorts of issues. But really having carbohydrates and clean sources of protein and high quality fats that are really nourishing the brain, because we're talking about brain function.
Right. What are some examples of those like high quality fats?
Some of the high quality fats that I really like to use are avocados. Coconut oil is an absolute must to have around. Some people can't tolerate the taste of coconut oil, but you know, my coaching clients will put it in a smoothie with some like berries and they can't even taste it. Mm. Some other great sources of fat are like hemp seeds. They could be sprinkled on, you know, like a dessert or even like on a salad. Walnuts are a great source of fat. Cacao. Mm. Cacao, which, you know, is the original form of chocolate, has a really nice level of fat in it as well.
This conversation is one I typically don't do with fiber practitioners, but I think it's such an important component because so many of us, we do therapy sessions hour after hour, and we're like scrambling to oftentimes maintain energy levels. So, you know, something related, how often do you eat meals like during the course of your day, especially on days where you have therapy sessions?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I'm really glad that you're asking me that, because there are times, and I've talked to other clinicians about this as well, there's times where I strategically schedule my day back to back for like 5 hours in a row so that I can maximize my time in the other parts of my day. And sometimes 5 or 6 hours back to back is not super convenient to feed yourself.
Right.
So, you know, it's about being strategic about it, and it's about having a clear plan going into it. So what I do when I have a really long day of clients back to back is I make sure that I hydrate. That's like the number one thing. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. And hydration starts from the day before. So if you're dehydrated, you've likely not drank enough water the day before. So I know that going into it. So I prepare a day in advance. And then I'll have a really nice meal with like omega fatty acids the night before so that I can actually think clearly and my body's like really nourished the night before. And then going into it again, I focus on a lot of hydration during the morning. And then I'll have a nice, I don't want to say heavy meal, but I'll have a nice size meal right before I go into like my back-to-back sessions. But I make sure that it's not like too heavy, because then that can make me sleepy. It has the potential to make people sleepy if they eat too much. And I for sure stay away from any kinds of breads, any kind of heavy carbohydrate that is going to make me tired. Because, you know, your clients can tell if you're tired right. and if you're not present. And that's my number one priority, is to really show up to my sessions in a way where I'm 100% present and there for the client. So, you know, I'll have like a bunch of berries. I'll have a lean source of protein like salmon, or I'll even do eggs as well. And what I typically do is I'll prepare like a smoothie. So in between the clients, I can take a little bit of calories in throughout the day as well. So it's not like 5 or 6 hours of pure fasting. So like in between 5 or 10 minutes in between clients, I can take a sip of like a protein smoothie or some kind of superfood elixir, just really fun stuff that keeps your brain on, but not like overly stimulated with like coffee or like energy drinks. Those types of things really interfere with the energetic flow that shows up to the room.
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely true. Like I just think across my own clinical training and just seeing other colleagues and just now just thinking about the eating habits and the drinking habits of, you know, colleagues and how that's likely impacted sessions, you know.
Absolutely.
You said one of the things which I was curious about. So you said hydration is sort of this core component, and you said a lot of times folks start out the day dehydrated. So what are some telltale signs that a clinician would know that they are feeling dehydrated?
Well, first of all, if they wake up tired, that's a pretty good sign. When you feel like your eyes are dry or your mouth is dry, that's a really good sign as well. You know, most of us wake up a little bit dehydrated because obviously we haven't taken any liquids throughout the whole night. And that's why it's absolutely critical to drink pure water right when you wake up, so that the body just like starts to wake up. And people that have trouble, actually, this is another telltale sign. When you have trouble waking up in the morning, you feel either foggy or like it takes you really hours to really feel alert. That's a very clear sign that there's some dehydration going on, because when they wake up and they drink anywhere from like 8 to 12, even 16 ounces of pure water right away before they put anything else in their stomach, they literally start to wake up, because every cell in your body starts to wake up because it's hydrated.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to look at it at a very cellular level like that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happening. And is fast-paced. We really like to pack in a lot and be very productive, which is fine. But sometimes if we don't have a clear plan or a clear approach or strategy, we tend to miss some of these very basic things that over time are compounding, and we kind of just forget about it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Shelley, just making a little bit of a transition, you're both in private practice and you're also now a health coach as well. And I wanted to ask you, the first question was, what was your biggest fear in starting in private practice?
I actually started private practice when I was still an intern, pre-license. And one of my biggest fears, I think because I had heard from peers that it was challenging to get an intern position for private practice, one of my biggest fears was that I wasn't going to be hired by a supervisor, or it was going to take a really long time to get hired, or even maybe find the right match of supervisor. And I think that held me back for a month or two, because I was hesitant to basically do the work and do the networking necessary to find out what supervisor would be a good match for the kind of practice that I wanted to build.
That fear almost became this hurdle. And how did you actually step over that hurdle?
You know, I had to get honest with myself about what I really wanted to do more. If I really wanted to sit in the fear, or if I really actually wanted to go out and help people, because that's what private practice is really about, is connecting with the exact person who you are meant to help. And I had a moment where, you know, I had to get honest about who it was that I wanted to help and what I was willing to do in order to get there. And so once I resolved that within myself, I recognized that I needed to be talking to people, telling them about what my goals were and who I wanted to help, and just be able to find out who would be a good match. And if somebody didn't have that position open, maybe they knew somebody who did.
What I hear you say is that it started at a core level by recognizing that fear, but then more importantly, recognizing that part of yourself that you knew that you were meant to help others in a very real way.
You know, it's so interesting because when we have these limiting beliefs about ourselves and these blocks, we are actually being a little bit egocentric. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but that really implies that the focus is on us. When we're really in a serving position, the focus shouldn't be on us. The focus should be on the people that we're meant to serve. Mm. And I feel like when I pivoted and when I shifted that and when my focus really turned really towards the people that I really felt needed my help and the people that I felt I was meant to serve, things kind of opened up. And, you know, I actually did connect with a previous professor from graduate school who actually had experience watching some of my sessions through a one-way mirror. Mm. So he felt confident about my work and he knew somebody who was actually hiring. So
yeah, I mean, it's amazing, right? Like if you had never taken that first step, some of these opportunities would have never come up.
Yeah. And you know, it's sometimes doing a little bit unusual or unconventional or untraditional things through calling people that you know or maybe have known in the past. And, you know, my professor actually had moved out of the area. He wasn't in San Diego anymore. You know, I could have come up with excuses about, oh, I shouldn't call him because he doesn't even live here anymore. He probably doesn't have these connections. But, you know, it's really about being open-minded and trying whatever could work. And I contacted him and, you know, he still had connections here that were viable.
Yeah, it's amazing how I think our own limiting beliefs is, you know, as you said, do really restrict us from taking action. And, you know, I just think about like my own journey about, you know, starting this blog and this podcast. And it was like a lot of those beliefs that you mentioned, those were the same ones, you know, like, why would someone pay attention? Why would, you know, like all of those things, right? And I think about that and those are very real. And it's not like I don't struggle with them now, but I just think like if I had listened to that, you know, and had never taken action, like, for example, we would never be talking, right?
Yeah.
Before we go into the hot couch round, I wanted to ask you this question, which was, you've now been developing this passion for healthy eating and you've transitioned now also being a health coach as well as doing your private practice. I wanted to ask you this at a very theoretical level, which is, how do you think focusing on something that you are passionate about, how does that make a difference in our own personal growth as clinicians?
Wow. I mean, it's fundamental. I mean, it's really important to understand what it is that lights you up as a clinician. Like for me, it was really important for me to understand like what I could talk about all day long and not get tired of it. Mm. Because it's really the energy that gets circulated inside of my body when I talk about the things that I'm passionate about that is palpable and it's very clear to everybody around. It's very clear that I'm excited about it. It's very clear that I'm passionate about the subject. And, you know, the more passionate we are about a specific topic, the more we're willing to learn about it and the more that we're able to actually teach about it. Because it's really about passing down the information so that it could really help somebody else.
Right. And it doesn't seem like a chore in trying to learn it and pick it up.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a chore. It's multifaceted and there's always something to learn. And everybody has something like that, whether they know it or not. It's really about exploring, and it's about just trying things out, trying new things out, because you never know what new passion you might develop. You know, the world needs that.
It's really about, I think, owning that voice or owning that part of ourselves that feels that passion toward that whatever topic that is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you ready for the podcast round?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. So what's a daily habit that you believe contributes to your success?
Well, let's see. I have a couple, but my daily habit would be, aside from mindfulness around eating, which I think is really second nature to me, I do meditation and visualization about what it is that I want to create that day. And this has been incredibly powerful. It's very clear when I'm doing it. It's very clear when I'm not doing it. I don't want to seem like I do it like 100% of the time. But when I do my visualization and my meditation, things really unfold in my day that I visualize, whereas otherwise it wouldn't. So my favorite.
Yeah, that's a great one. What's an online resource that's been invaluable on your private practice journey?
You know, I'm not a huge tech fan, so I don't do a ton of technology, but I would say my website for sure. The practice's website is very, very important. And Psychology Today has been a very nice tool. You know, I do get a lot of inquiries and a lot of clients from there, as well as referrals. We're online all the time. Our society is online all the time. So, and my clients hang out online. So that's where they find me.
What's a favorite business-related book that's been instrumental to your professional and personal development?
You know, just this year, I actually listened to The Secrets of a Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. This book is incredibly powerful because it really talks about mindset and it talks a lot about limiting beliefs. But most importantly, you would think that this book really focuses on like money making or, you know, cash driven activities, but it's really more about the level of service that you're really here to do. And that's why it's my favorite this year.
It so resonates with what we do. As clinicians.
Yeah.
What's one tip that you would give to someone who's thinking about starting in private practice?
One tip that I would give someone who's thinking about starting a private practice would be to find a mentor who has the kind of private practice that you want to build and either get coaching around it or get a mentorship around it, because I feel it's so important to build some type of a small community and really see it being done so that you can actually either recreate that or form something that you want to create.
And your last question is, imagine that you were starting your private practice journey all over again. You have $500 and your laptop. What is that first step that you would take toward building your practice?
The first step would be to really get clear on who I feel I'm meant to serve and who I feel like I'm meant to help, and then start from there. And then from that point, I would definitely get some, I don't know if $500 is going to do it, to be honest, but but I would definitely invest in some pictures. I think that quality images on your website that convey a realistic picture of who you are is really important, because as human beings, we're so visual and clients are looking for certain visual cues online and on your website. I think that's really important because that's how your clients connect with you. So website for sure. It doesn't have to be fancy either. It can be like a Squarespace or something that, you know, that you can do yourself. They have a bunch of neat templates that are very professional. They're very clean. So I would say like a basic website, clean, clear pictures would be great. And I would say to invest in Psychology Today or some kind of online directory so that clients can search for you in the area that you're in.
Awesome. Shelly, these are such great answers, and you are off the hot couch.
Okay.
Shelly, what are the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
The best way is through, I have two websites. I have my Clean Forks website, www.cleanforks.com. And I can be found at shelly@cleanforks.com if there's any questions or emails, as well as my private practice, which is anxietytraumatherapy.com.
Awesome. And I'll link to that here in the show notes. Shelley, thank you so much for doing this. I really enjoyed our conversation, especially that beginning part. I think that part of eating is sometimes an overlooked thing, but such an essential thing to us as clinicians.
Yeah, absolutely. That was really fun. Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Shelley. You know, after my conversation, I was thinking about a story that I heard in grad school, which was, if you look across certain professions, for example, let's say construction, right? The person that is the construction worker is very important, but the tools that that person uses to be able to do their work is equally important as well. But for us as clinicians, we often don't have those sets of tools per se, right? Like the skills that we have, our ability to look at things from a theoretical perspective, to be present with that person. In essence, our minds and our abilities really are our tools. And part of keeping our tools honed is that we eat well and we drink in a way that's healthy and good for our bodies. And just reminded me of that conversation. For more information on Shelley, you can find that at anxietytraumatherapy.com. And then Shelley's also has another website that she recently started called cleanforks.com. As we wrap up, as you remember from last week's episode where I talked all about podcasting, I shared that I'm going to be launching a course later this year. And we had an unbelievable amount of signups this past week, and I think we've over 160 clinicians. And I just think about so many podcasts that are going to rise out of this. And it just makes me so excited. You know, this past week, I actually spent doing all of the slides and putting together a lot of the worksheets. And this week, I'm going to be doing a lot of the recording and all the screen captures for the podcast. So everything from helping you take that idea for your podcast all the way to actually creating concrete steps, all the way to recording, to creating artwork, to submitting it to iTunes, all of that. And I'm creating all sorts of videos and handouts just to show you step by step how to do that. If you are interested in this and want to know more about when the course launches, you can sign up for it at sellingthecouch.com/mypodcastlaunch. Thank you, everyone. And show notes to today's episode are at sellingthecouch.com/session3. Take good care and have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcastingworkshop.